Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, the second since the closure of the January transfer window. I reckon that might be the very last mention of the January transfer window too. My name is Michael Bailey. I am with Chief Norwich City Correspondent Paddy Davitt and our colleague David Freezer to look back on Saturday's 1-0 win over Middlesbrough at Carrow Road and all the subsequent talking points thereafter. Of course, it was a good win. Everyone seems to be in a good place at the moment, Paddy. We had the Q&A at Pinken.com this lunchtime, and generally, it's a little bit of a buzz around the place at the moment.
Yeah, there is, and it's nice to see. Nice to be part of, in some small way. And right to be, so I think still not scoring in multiples of goals, but it feels increasingly that defensively they're now there. Even without Pinto and Harrison, really, revelation, you know, he might want to consider maybe redeploying or changing his job description, I think, because he might have a career there at the highest level in that role. I'm not sure about central midfield holding player, but it's now the top end of the pitch. And although it was still only 1-0, and you could argue, you know, against 10 men, that wasn't good enough. I felt there was so much control in that second half, and when they did put some width into their play, there was a couple of chances, and it was more Randolph saves than Oliveira misses for me. So, yeah, that could easily have been a more comfortable margin of victory, and they can now bounce into two difficult away games, Villa and Derby. Derby this weekend, small matter of a derby at home against Ipswich, but I think there's a confidence there. You can see that in their play. They've all bought into it now, it would appear, and the window distraction is gone. I'll mention it again, but you know, isn't Naismith hanging about, Russell Martin hanging about, they're gone for the interim at least, and it is the lads there are all part of his plans. Crack on.
Yeah, it seems like there's a purpose around the place. That's probably the best way of putting it. Norwich won 1-0 thanks to Tom Tribble's goal. He signed a new contract too, 3.5 years, which had, of course, been in the pipeline for a little while. That all factored into the pre-game buzz, I guess there was, unless I just made it up, but it felt like there was a little bit. And we had the three new signings, of course, and we got to see two of them on Saturday too, Dave.
Yeah, that was a nice idea, really, to unveil a new contract just sort of minutes before kickoff, you know.
Not for us.
Not from a reporter's point of view. Mr. Davitt managed to get it up online quite quickly still, though, of course. Yeah, I mean, they did try something similar with the AGM last year, didn't they? They announced Josh Murphy's contract during the AGM. So, yeah, that did add a little bit of buzz. And then, of course, Tom scoring the goal made it all sort of fit together nicely. I felt it was one where it just, for the first time, it just felt controlled and it felt like their plans came together. They should have won it more. And, you know, if they'd have beaten Burton 1-0 or Bristol City 1-0 earlier in the season, games that they should have won, that they did dominate, then perhaps everybody would have just been a little bit more comfortable with this whole transitional season a little bit earlier. But it felt like almost a landmark game in that it's really that first time where everybody was united and said, you know, we can see what Daniel Farke is trying to do. You can see what Stuart Webber has done and the way that he is working. We can now see that evidence on the pitch in beating a good team in Borough. So, I think everyone is going to be quietly confident, but with that sort of caveat that you've got some difficult games coming up.
I'm sure we'll get stuck into the actual dynamics of the game in terms of the sending off and what difference it made. But when you distill it, Pad, I mean, it's 5 wins in 7 in the league. I think they've only lost 1 game in 9 across all competitions. And actually, their home form has picked up as far as I'm concerned. You know, that was their first clean sheet at Carrow Road since the end of September against Bristol City. And that's probably been the biggest issue at home, in a way. You know, they've at times had to come from behind and they've not been able to really shut sides out at home. Lapses against Barnsley straight after half time, things like that. It's been awkward, but it does feel like they've ironed out a few of those specific things, and maybe we can stop talking so much about the fact that at home it's not working in a way it is, to a degree. I know there's still a long way to go in terms of their attacking play.
Yeah, well, I think you've hit the nail on the head for me. I would still have reservations that at Carrow Road we're not seeing enough going forward, but hopefully that will change with one or two in injections of quality. You know, Leitner will come on to, I'm sure, but if he plays a good body of games between now and the end of the season, they will create chances because he's an intelligent player and with a skill set that's probably too good for the Championship. So work to do for me at Carr Road. Yeah, no, I take your points about you know, the first clean sheet, and it has been better, the results, but still for me, first, I mean, if that hasn't gone in from Tom Tribal, the mood shifts at half time. They wouldn't have been, the punters wouldn't have been happy. They were getting a little bit grouchy, I felt, as that first half elapsed after Gusted's red card, because it was what we saw there, it was what we've seen too often. Too lateral, too ponderous, too easy to play against. You know, Borough basically, even with a man less, just banked up, two banks of four, narrow, because they know clearly that Norwich down the wide areas, as much as we see Pinto with his bursts all the time, he chops back in. You know, there isn't enough happening outside the fullback, cutting back balls from the byline, and obviously then that flows into, well, there isn't enough people in the box, and Oliveira seemingly wants to come outside the box and link the play. So they're all interlinked, those issues. But as I say, I thought second half they did put a bit more width in the game, and I don't think that was a coincidence that it was when Leitner was on the pitch.
Indeed, and we will definitely come on tomorrow, so don't worry about that. I remember now going on the first half about how they seemed unable or unwilling to score from inside the box. Everything seemed to have to come from outside the box. And, you know, I was probably in the middle of saying that you'd never win a game doing that. And then obviously Twibble scores from 20 plus yards. But yeah, that framework is still an issue. And I guess what we're seeing is this efficiency that Norwich had when they were good earlier in the season, that has crept back into things now. But how far is that going to be able to take them? Do they need to be able to cut loose? Because as Pad said, there was a control there on Saturday that hasn't always been there.
Yeah, it's not job done, isn't it? That's the one thing, you know, Daniel Farke will openly admit that. They've got a long way to go before they're anywhere near promotion contenders. You know, they may be able to put together some kind of playoff chase, but it looks pretty unlikely. Yeah, there are still issues which they've got to overcome, and as Pad said, the timing of the goal was perfect, really, because there was a lot of sideways passing going there. And, you know, Nelson Oliveira, he definitely has been putting in the effort. There's no way you can say that he's not trying at the moment, but it just doesn't seem that it suits his game naturally. He's not a Grant Holt, he's not a centre forward, despite the fact that he's quite a big chap. You know, there was an instance in front of us where I think Lewis was taking a throw on the left, and Madison and him very obviously switched, and the game plan was obvious that it was Nelson was going to come short and try and win the header and flick it on, and that's just not Nelson Oliveira's game, is it really? But with Hernandez coming in, and perhaps with what we saw from Leitner, in that he can put a ball into space, which is something that we haven't seen too much of, perhaps Nelson can start thinking about getting more into the box now, because he is playing too much outside the box, and that is a problem. And you're not going to win games 1-0 by spanking one in from 25 yards all the time, are you?
No, although they do seem to be making habit of doing it quite a lot. And it's interesting, I suppose, the more, as you mentioned, Pad, the squad's kind of refined now. It's closer, certainly, than where it was, say, before January, to what Daniel would want to work with. Likewise, the way they're going about things on the pitch is closer to what he wants. And I guess when you get to that point, the players who maybe don't quite fit in, that gap becomes maybe more apparent, which feels like where we are with Nelson.
Yeah, albeit, you know, probably out of necessity, he's been getting the regular shirt every week. But when you say that, I immediately think of Watkins, I immediately think of Husband. Raggett, not the case, but he will rapidly need, and he alluded to that Friday, Farke, he will rapidly need to show he can be part of this. I think there's a train pulling away now, and some of them are firmly on the carriages, and there's others on the platform at the minute. And moving forward into the summer, beyond this season, irrespective of where they finish in terms of the table, I think there'll be a bit of movement again in and out, because you know, as you rightly say, the template is there now. The identity is coming through each week, and there's lads who clearly look like they fit what Farke wants, and there's ones who don't. And I think that filtering process is now getting accelerated. Yeah.
Let's talk about very briefly Tom Tribal, shall we? Because I did see one of our Borough counterparts in a video describe his goal as a bit of a long punt from distance, which I thought was slightly hard on what was a very neatly taken goal, I thought. But he's an interesting one, because as we said, we'll come on to Morris, and the way that we've reacted to Morris is very similar to the reaction that Tom kind of got when he burst onto the scene. You looked at him and thought, oh, here's a player, they've done well to get this lad. He's now been rewarded with that new contract, and how the midfield mix looks going forward will be fascinating. But in Tom Tribal now, they have a player who signed on for 3 years, and you'd like to think is one of those that they can build around, especially as, you know, we suspect Alex Tetti won't be here next season.
Well, big time. I mean, it was 4 games without him starting, wasn't it? So when Tom comes back into the team, you straight away reminded that he is sort of the metronome, isn't he? He's the one that sets the tone of the play, and he gets the best out of Alex Tetti almost, because he takes that pressure away from Alex. He can just keep it simple and defend the back four. But equally, Tom can get stuck in a little bit, can't he? And they just seem to balance each other out really nicely. And I was a bit, I mean, obviously he rolled his ankle, so he had to come off, but I was surprised at how similar to Tribal Leitner was. I was expecting that maybe once Vrančić came on for Maddison, that Leitner would push forward as the number 10 and Vrančić would drop deep, given what we've seen recently. But no, Leitner stayed in that sort of quarterback position, the sort of David Fox position, maybe, for if you want to go back to the Paul Lambert team. And it would be interesting to see if him and Tom could complement each other, like you say, post Tetti, if that's what we're looking at. But I don't think we'll be seeing Leitner and Vrančić as the holding midfielders in a championship game, or I hope not anyway, because I can't see them having the muscle to cope in the championship unless they both really do sort of operate on a higher level with the ball. But I'd be surprised to see that.
It does move us on nicely, really, because I know James Maddison had a knock and I think was it a hamstring injury, wasn't it, and thigh or whichever, that he was clearly battling through a little bit on Saturday. But I mean, to me, James Maddison seemed to have far less influence as soon as Morris Leitner came on the pitch, who came on for Tom Tribal, and these are three very good midfielders. I'm not really sure how you figured factor them all in from here on pad.
good question. Nice problem to have, I would suggest. You know, Maddison, if he has to be sort of downgraded slightly, I think that's good for the lad, because there's been far for a 21-year-old kid, first full season at this level, far too much placed on his young shoulders, and he might just run out of a bit of gas now over the home stretch. So the more options, the better for me. And it was noticeable, you know, injury issues aside, that the amount of teammates who were looking for Leitner, I mean, they know they're footballers, they know to score. You know, they know a very good player when they see him. They don't need to go on his wiki page to know he's a good player. So they've been training with him for a week, 10 days. And yes, I can conceivably see Leitner being the go-to man, and maybe Maddison slightly shifted out into wider areas. But again, that's no bad thing. It's another stage of his development. You know, the fact that there are other players in there who can maybe grab a bit of the share of the limelight won't do many harm at all.
No, absolutely. Morris was... It's hard because we're obviously talking about a 30-minute spell against 10 men, and Borough were pretty woeful, I thought, on Saturday, given, you know, even regardless of the fact that they had a man sent... They had Rudiger dead sent off. I just thought they didn't really seem to have any life or spark about them, really. But in that environment, it was maybe ideal for Morris Leitner to shine, but he certainly did shine. The way he used the ball seemed to be on a different level to what we've seen at this level from Norwich this season. And I think I said it to you, Paddy, earlier today, smiling a little bit at Norwich fans looking at Saturday and going, yeah, Morris, he does look like a good player. I think, you know, if he keeps playing like that, you know, he might convince Norwich to try and sign him permanently in the summer. I mean, well, as far as I'm concerned, the guy is here to rebuild his career for a short period and then see what comes, and if he keeps playing like that, anything could come, especially here in England. He'll know the door to the Premier League isn't very far away when you're playing in the Championship and you're shining. Obviously still very early days, of course,
particularly with David Wagner and Jurgen Klopp already in the Premier League, so that they will probably be keeping a little eye on how he gets on, because they will know full well the talent he's got in his boots. And if he does continue at that level, then he's going to be worth millions, isn't he, at the end of the season? And unless you're selling James Maddison for a real top whack fee, then Norwich aren't going to be spending millions on anyone in the summer, because they've still got cloth to cut. But In terms of options, you've got Marcus Edwards supposedly back in training. I mean, Daniel really has got some options at the moment. So we haven't even seen Dennis Shrabani yet. So, it feels like it's in a good place at the moment. And it will be interesting to see how Maddison does, to be honest. I mean, we know he can cross a ball. We know he can take a set piece. Oh, unlucky with that set piece, of course. Wasn't he? The free kick that he, you know, sort of mimicked Kevin De Bruyne's effort for Manchester City. He was gutted, wasn't he, when he saw it went wide, because he'd done the hard bit in beating the wall. So yeah, it'll be good to see how Maddison adapts. Josh Murphy worked hard again on Saturday without necessarily things coming off for him, and then we almost had quite the impact from O'Neill Hernandez, didn't we?
We did indeed, and I've kind of mentioned that possibly he should have squared it to put Leitner in, but for no reason do I have any doubt that a player in that position is going to try and hit the far post and score. And that again, I've just felt it's the competition, isn't it? Because you can see Hernandez breathing down Josh's neck, and as Dave mentioned, Dennis, as I'm going to call him, Shrabini, will be pushing hard to get some game time now and show what he can do with Nelson being pushed, and they're all players that kind of need that.
Without competition, you basically any level of football, but obviously the higher you go, if it's comfort zone football, then that's what you'll see. You'll see displays that are missing that edge, and in the Championship, it's the edge you need. You know, you look at, dare I say it, but you have to admire the job he's done there this season, Wilder at Sheffield United. That group of players shouldn't be anywhere near where they are in the table, but they play almost kind of a mirror image of their manager. You know, they're spiky, they're aggressive, they're in your faces, and you can guarantee that that comes from within the group. You know, that has to come from within, and the sense that if I'm not on it today, then I look at the bench and there's now options there, and hasn't felt like that. And that's partly, I suppose, a byproduct of having to prune the squad, having to thin out the numbers, bring the age down. And maybe they did it to too drastic a degree really in the summer, and they paid for that, you know, after one or two decent bursts just before Christmas there. They were looking a little bit weary and lacking in options. That isn't the case now. And you just hope that all the characters are of the right sort, and if they think, okay, I'm out of the team here, I'm going to show you type of thing, and train even harder. And when they get their chance, grab it. And the upshot of all of that will be Norwich will be A, more consistent, and B, probably picking up the type of results they're getting at the minute.
Two footnotes then. Rudy Gusted's sending off, which was a straight red for going through on Grant Hanley's ankle. That was only a few minutes really after he almost kicked Alex Tetti in the head, which was a booking. Tony Pulis wasn't really happy with either of those decisions, but whichever way you perm it, he probably should have been sent off anyway, shouldn't he, Pat?
Well, that's what Farker said. Yeah, I mean, he's on a yellow, and that's at least the yellow card challenge. You know, he wasn't in control. He's gone lunging in. He's got nowhere near the ball. I think Pulis was basically saying, in terms of the straight red aspect of it, he'd seen worse in the Premier League, 10 times worse, I think was the phrase, in the last week. Not sure that's mitigation for when your player commits an act like that, but there you go. And then, yeah, I mean, he even tried to write off the yellow card as the guy more or less bent his head down and deserved it because his head was in that position. But then again, he's going to do that, isn't he? You know, that's he's looking at it from his player's point of view. But I think ultimately, when the cameras are turned off and he's he's on the team bus going home, he won't be impressed with Gusted there, because effectively he left his team playing for an hour with 10 men.
And they are going to appeal it, I think, was the suggestion from Tony. I thought Borough were better in the home game, Pad. Personally, I thought they were better up at the Riverside under Gary Monk. As I said earlier, I thought they were really disappointing. For a side who spent so much money, Brita Sambalonga, £50 million striker, he might have had a sniff at one of those chances in the first half, because it was pretty even before the sending off.
But in all my experience from a Norwich perspective, whenever they've come up against a Pulis side, you just think, this is anti-football. You know, Pulis, Pulis's team's up. They don't seem to offer you anything yet. You can't argue with the guy's track record. He's been residually effective, but no, I never look at a Tony Pulis team and think, these have got some stardust sprinkled around them.
I love that, residually effective. I think that's about as drab as it needs to be.
They hung on at the Riverside, didn't they? Norwich, Middlesbrough had a lot of chances that night. Adam Gunn was very good. Traore and Asombalonga both threatened, didn't they? So I thought Bamford was poor on Saturday. I mean, in terms of Harrison Reed being tested at right wing back, I thought Ollie Watkins put him under a lot more pressure at Brentford the week before. So I mean that shot in the first half early doors from Bamford, I thought just summed him up. Just a lazy swipe and it went, you know, a couple of metres wide.
It was gorgeous shape on the ball, and yeah. It would have been a wonderful goal if it gone in.
Or pardon me, he could have taken a touch and put it in on his right and actually got it on target. But that's Patrick Bamford for you. And just following up on what Pad was saying about the competition as well, you look at every position and no one's position is quite safe at the moment, are they? The only thing I was a little bit confused by on the bench on Saturday was that Marley Watkins was on there rather than Sean Raggett again. I mean, there's not really any defensive cover there, and I know there's the homegrown rule there, but Watkins and Raggett both fall into that category, so I don't really understand where Sean is. But the back three clearly doing very well at the moment, being very consistent. They look a good unit, but they know that Sean Raggett is absolutely, you know, chomping at the bit to get his opportunity. And sooner or later, Norwich need to give it to him, really. Otherwise, they're kind of holding up his career, aren't they?
There are players who will not be happy between now and the end of the season, because it's a tight group, but there are more players than there are spaces in the 18. And again, we've barely spoken about Marcus Edwards, so there are players who are going to be chomping at the bit. Champing at the bit to get involved. Johnny Howsam, we haven't touched on him. Let's do a very brief bit. He got a lovely warm reception. I think he clapped the snake pit back when he ran out for his little warm-up pad. Nice to see Johnny back. Surprised he didn't start. Didn't really have an influence when he came on. And then he said goodbye to James Maddison and Daniel Farker on the pitch at the end.
From a Norwich perspective, that's the perfect afternoon. Very surprising by all accounts. It's the first game he's not started under Pulis, so I'm not sure what TP was seeing there, because I would think from a man management point of view, Johnny Arson, given it ended quite sourly, no secret there, but he would have been desperate to show what he's all about and how good a player he is and what Norwich were missing. So trick miss there for me from a very experienced manager, because I don't think Messrs Clayton Ledbetter offered anything that Johnny Arson wouldn't have offered. So but it was, yeah, in terms of the human aspect of it, deserved that ovation, 5 years of excellent service, and probably gave his best years to Norwich, so you wish him all the best in the rest of his career.
It was a very emotionally charged afternoon as well for a lot of Norwich fans. There was the 52nd minute applause, of course, marking the death of Norwich superfan Michelle Dack, who died of cancer last week, and clearly a very popular fan. And also Simon Thomas's son Ethan Thomas was one of the mascots, and there's obviously been such a heartbreaking time for that family too. I think that in a way probably brought the best out of Carrow Road over the whole for everyone. By the way, you can listen to Tom Tribble's interview. That's on the Audio Boom feed, whatever you want to call it, on the podcast feed, and it's pinken.com. obviously Farker, Pulis, it's all there, pinken.com, and the YouTube channel too. Oh, Dave,
can I just say before we go on to Derby, on Michelle Dack, I didn't know her, but 908 consecutive games before she fell ill, that is a mighty achievement. I mean, we're obviously fortunate to be working and paid to go to games, but you know, we're nowhere near anything like that. I mean, none of us have done every single game of this season, have we? So, you know, not far off, but 908 games, I mean, that's about 18 seasons and a considerable amount of money. So, you know, that is a proper Norwich City super fan.
Yeah, so I mean, that's not long after I would have gone to my first away game.
Quite, yeah. I mean, that's sort of Nigel Worthington's arrival era. So, yeah, I'm sure she's going to be missed by a lot of people, but a real touching tribute that minute.
It was indeed. Derby then on Saturday. It's going to be tough, this, isn't it? We've got a few reunions, Pad. Cam Jam, Bradley J. I don't think he's ever been called that. and they are flying at the moment. I mean, they look... They're second still, aren't they, at the moment? Yeah. And properly in the mix. I think they're a little bit worried that their past demons are going to come back to haunt them and they're going to fall off the wagon again. But Gary Rowett just knows how to get a team to win, and they do seem to be metronomic in the way they're doing it too.
Yeah, to be fair, but I wasn't overly impressed with them down here. I thought that was more Norwich's exertions after Arsenal. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Jerome scored Saturday, didn't he? So he doesn't need to bother this weekend now. I mean, in all the times I've been to Derby, it's there's very little in it. I remember Stephen Whittaker scoring at the back post. I remember Johnson, didn't he, scored last season. It was 1-0, but Norwich probably deserved something from that game as a good penalty shot. I remember Josh Murphy got felled, or was it Jacob? But anyway, I'd rather go and play them type of games, Wolves, the following week, because there's no pressure on Norwich there at all. The expectancy, if you look at the league table, is on those two clubs. They've spent the money as well. So that's a good test for me. It's when they go to the Burtons of this world, with the greatest respect to the Burtons of this world, where they don't seem to be able to find the right formula. But going to Derby, I think they'll have opportunities to play in both of those games, and I don't necessarily see two defeats coming, but ultimately, if they can go there and get two positive results, then it's more affirmation that Farker's on the right path.
You can hear the positivity in Paddy's voice there. I mean, it was like going to the Brentford game. I put a little bit of money on a 1-0 win, and Norwich did the business. Because at that point, I feel confident that if they can get themselves ahead, they can probably nick and see out a game like that anywhere, maybe apart from Wolves. I mean, that's going to be a different kettle of fish. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but as Paddy says, in those situations, they do seem more comfortable. It suits them.
They do, yeah. I mean, there's four away games in a row they haven't conceded, isn't it? So in the league, so apparently that is
thanks, Dave.
Matched a club record. Apparently, Brian Gunn and Kevin Keeler managed that, but no one's managed five. So that's Angus's challenge at Derby. But that has suited them, with the pressure being off. Obviously, they just won at Bristol City, who are currently dropping like a stone out of the promotion picture. They're well adrift of Wolves. I think it's 11 points adrift of Wolves, but they've got Villa, Cardiff and even Fulham are coming up on the rails as well. So there's going to be quite a competition up there. And you look at the results on Saturday, there is quite a divide almost. The teams at the top are proving far stronger than the teams at the bottom, which I know sort of sounds fairly logical, but all the results seem to be going in that direction. There's not too many upsets at the weekend. So I see it being a real difficult one. I think, if I remember rightly from the Championship highlights, that Jerome created Huddleston's goal as well. So I think it was his shot that was parried, and then Huddleston scored. So he's going to be bang up for that game, no doubt about that. And just got to hope that Grant Hanley, closer, Zimmerman, they know exactly what Cam's about. They've just got to stand up to his muscle, really, haven't they?
Tom Huddleston's apparently rediscovering a lot of good form there at the moment, so it's not a surprise he's called Joe Ledley too. Tom Lawrence, I don't know if he's fit at the moment, but you remind me there, Dave, I hate the cliche that anyone can beat anyone in the Championship. It's like, well, yes, as they can in any division, but I think there is a disparity between the teams, and a side like Villa, who've got Robert Snodgrass and that amount of quality pushing for the top end is there. Do we want to mention the derby, or should we leave? No.
As in Ipswich?
Yeah.
Carrow Road?
Yeah.
Week on Sunday?
Yeah, that'll do, I think, won't it? We'll save that for next. Although I'm not in next week, so I can leave it to you guys to tee up.
Yeah, well, it's the run of games, isn't it? If they can come out of, beat Ipswich, get a draw from one of Derby or Wolves away, and then you've got quite a favourable run of results. You've got, run of fixtures. Bolton at home, Barnsley away, Forest home, Hull away, Reading home. None of those teams are doing particularly well at the moment. So if you can just survive this three-game spell with a bit of positivity intact and, not too much damage done, then you've got a real opportunity to lay down that marker for next season, I would have thought.
There we go. I managed to get a fair bit of positivity out of Paddy and Dave today. That's good news. Everything's on the up. And we all head to Derby, which is sort of on the up. It was more west, I suppose, but there we go. It's a nice place to go and watch some football, and we'll see what we get on the other side of it. Pat, Dave, thank you very much. FA Youth.
The Youth. Yeah. Wednesday night, Carrow Road, Newcastle, fifth round of the FA Youth Cup. We'll be there for updates. Obviously, they're hoping there'll be a decent crowd. They have to charge for Youth Cup games. They're not allowed to give tickets free like they do for under-23s games. So if you can't go, we'll give you the coverage. The draw was also made today. I can't promise to remember it all because there was a lot of ors and ifs. But it's another home draw. So if Norwich and Newcastle get through, they play Bury or Birmingham in the sixth round. And then if they got to the semi-final, they would play one of Spurs or Chelsea. But there's obviously a lot of things to be straightened out before then. But that's another potential home tie. So that Youth Cup run is becoming quite has got quite the potential for fans to really get involved with it. So yeah, that, looking forward to that.
Good man. Yes, so that will all be, our updates will be at pinken.com. We may well do the Pinken show live beforehand in some way or another. We're still trying to sort that out, but keep an eye out for that as well. Enjoy that, and we will see you the other side of the trip to Derby. All the build up, live coverage and analysis, of course, at the website as usual. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you on the other side. Goodbye.